And folks, we're going to deal with public hearing and possible, although not probable, work session on Senate Bill 832. All of you folks have signed up to testify. All of you folks have testified before on navigability issues. And we all know what the problems are that we're facing out there. The problem we're facing is lawsuits, false arrests, not knowing where we stand on our own private property issue rights, and where the fishermen or recreationalists stand as far as their rights are concerned. What we're trying to do is to develop a bill that addresses both concerns, private property owner and recreationalists at the same time. Now, if we get there, it'll probably be a small miracle, quite frankly. You folks don't seem to want to get along. You folks seem to want to have it your way. We may have to make a decision in this committee, and we will. And hopefully the decision we make is one that all of us in this room can live with. We're going to try to do just that. So when you have folks who want to be able to fish in a river, float that river, and fish, and you have property owners who say, no, you cannot float that river because it's my property. You can't step out of your boat into that river because it's my river. And we're not getting along very well. And we're going to try to get to some kind of a consensus, if we can, to resolve this issue. Okay? Hopefully, we can all live with it. I don't happen to have a river going through my property in Coquille, but you folks out there do, and you're involved. With that, I'd like to ask Mr. Donovan. We've been working with several state agencies as well as with the individuals who are sponsoring 832 and trying to put some programs into this package that may be beneficial to a bunch of us within state government. Mr. Donovan has what we call the Dash 5 amendments, and also involved in the process of this dialogue is State Parks. And I'm wondering, Phil, if we should have State Parks come forward in this process, or if that'd be appropriate.
I would be happy to present. For the record, my name is Phil Donovan, representing Northwest Steelheaders. I'd be happy to go over the Dash 5 amendments before the committee, and then bring up Parks as needed.
I'll do that. Let's cover the Dash 5 amendments.
Sure.
And was there Dash 5 back there?
The amendments proposed by the Dash 5 are friendly amendments by the Northwest Steelheaders, and I believe they reflect our willingness to work with parties with legitimate concerns about Senate Bill 832. One of the amendments, Chairman Tarno, was your prior knowledge of the issue and your concerns about portage and how portage was handled by recreation users, and a need to strengthen portage language. We have attempted to do so. PGE, Portland General Electric, approached us with valid concerns about public access surrounding power-producing facilities. They came to us with language, and we've incorporated those into the Dash 5. YMCA organizational camps also had concerns about privacy and activities surrounding their camps during summer sessions. We've worked with them to provide language that would help protect them and have come to a mutual agreement. Division of State Lands approached the Northwest Steelheaders with regards to enforcement provisions, and we have adopted those as well. So in a nutshell, those are the bulk of it within Dash 5, but probably the most significant amendment to the Dash 5 amendments is the creation of a pilot project. Mr. Chair, the pilot project seeks to address really the biggest issues before us in utilizing our rivers and streams, and that is sanitation facilities, access facilities, and user education.
And Mr. Donovan, that's in Section 16 of the Dash 5 amendments. Correct.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. Uh, basically, defining the normal high water mark is an important step. So is promoting respectful and responsible use. As such, we want to work collaboratively with landowners, state agencies, local governments to develop these facilities to promote responsible stewardship. We call this the Oregon River Recreation Management Pilot Project. And this is something that we would like to see done as a private-public partnership. It's limited in its scope today to three rivers, but we believe it's the vision that we would hold for all of our rivers. Those three rivers are the Chetco, the North Santa Yam, and the Clackamas. Basically, we want to see a pilot project that will serve as the genesis for implementation of river facilities throughout the state.
And so, when you talk about river facilities, what are you referring to, basically?
Sanitation facilities, primarily, and as well access facilities, boat launches, and the like.
In that dialogue and establishing that kind of a policy, who all are we talking to about this issue, Phil?
Well, with regards to state agencies, I think we're looking to the state parks primarily to in terms of the implementation of this. But it's also critical that we involve organizations like the Northwest Steelheaders, but as well it's been brought forth that the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation could be a focal point for this sort of pilot project.
Okay. Let me ask a couple of folks to come forward. Is Captain Lindsey Ball here? Okay. Have you talked to, is he on State Parks here?
I think Mr. Jim Lockwood is here, and from the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation, Mr. Chair, Bob Brobeck, Executive Director.
Is he in the audience? Could you come forward, please? And sir, for the record, your name, please.
My name is Rod Brobeck. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation.
Brobeck, we had a little conversation with Captain Ball the other day about trying to put together a program that would be beneficial to both the private property owners as well as the recreationalists in our state who use our riverways. And part of the dialogue was to solicit support from volunteer groups who work in conjunction with our state agencies in maintenance of our riverways in our state, setting up facilities for those folks who do use the waterways to allow them the opportunity to have facilities available instead of somebody's private property to use as their portable toilet, as well as maybe some other facilities that the recreationalists can use that would protect the private property rights of individuals. And Captain Ball was amenable to putting together, working with a group of folks to address those kinds of issues. And I certainly appreciate the efforts that you folks will be able to offer us to do that. And as part of the dialogue, we're looking at trying to talk to state parks and as well as Division of State Lands and putting together a program to deal with that. Do you want to address that a little bit for us, if you could, if you feel comfortable?
Yeah, this is fairly new to me, what your plan. I've heard about it for a couple of weeks, so it's kind of in the making, but I think if I tell you about the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation, you'll see how it would kind of fit in. We're 18 years old. We started out, our first great project was the Deschutes River. We helped raise over $1 million to buy the lower 12 miles of the Deschutes River and turn it over to for public access. And since then, we've done quite a few projects. And our latest one, we're working with landowners, state agencies, federal funding, state funding, on the salmon restoration project up and down the coast. We presently have raised funding for 10 biologists to work up and down the coast in Northern Atlanta Valley for salmon restoration projects. And we do that when we form partnerships with landowners, watershed councils, other groups that are interested in helping out.
but we've got the biologists out there to work with these people on the ground construction projects. And then we do funding. We get grants. We do the leverage our money for federal and state money for funding. And what we're talking about here on the rivers, I think, and again, I don't know too much about it, but we have bank accounts we have for various people that they have funded. They've got money that they want kept separate from their ordinary funds, and we keep that for them and work out an agreement where they have access to that money for special projects, or at times we help them raise money to match that if they've got any accounts. But we work with different groups to do that. Is that helpful?
It's a start. And so what we're looking for now is to start to get things rolling if we can. Is Lindsay in the room yet? I'll take a phone call. And Lockwood stepped out too? Okay. I wish Mr. Cleary, can you add any kind of help to, on this issue about trying to put together a plan or program to benefit the recreationalists and property owners? I talked to you briefly on the phone this afternoon, and maybe you've got some thoughts since then. And Mr. Lockwood is back in the room now, too. So, gentlemen, maybe Mr. Cleary and Mr. Lockwood can sit down for a moment. And what was you far away, Phil? And Jim and Paul, I know that this is the concept is fairly new to you guys, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just trying to put together something that may work for our folks to use. I think you've got a brief idea of what the basic concept is, and that's to provide rest stops for our recreationalists that will not impact private property owners. And with that, I think you've got some thoughts that you'd like to throw out. Lindsay, you want to join these gentlemen up here for the chair, or?
I had a phone call.
I think, Mr. Ball, we'll have a couple of minutes. It's your fault that we're talking about this issue. I certainly appreciate your concerns and your thoughts, and hopefully it's something we're going to bring to fruition. Lindsay, why don't you just give the folks in the room and us a brief idea of how this thing in the past, your experiences in the past as far as working with these kinds of issues.
Okay. For the record, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm captain of the Fish and Wildlife Division of the Oregon State Police. And I think I was on a dead run, so I'm a little out of breath here. I think for everyone's edification tonight, so maybe you can understand a little bit about my background for those in the audience who aren't familiar with me or know me. Understanding private property rights as I do, looking back in my family history, we moved here to Oregon in 1847 and still hold the original land claim on our family farm. And my mother-in-law also has a ranch over in eastern Oregon where she runs about 300 pairs. So I'm very familiar with what private property rights are and how people feel about their property. That coupled with the fact that I encountered the first issue on navigability and trespass with a fisherman and a landowner in Astoria back in 1972. Over the years continue to come across those same kinds of complaints. And having been involved with the committee that developed the Deschutes River Plan, I see that there's more to this issue than just simply and merely drawing a line as to where the property boundaries are. Now, I think, in all honesty, we're going to have to draw the line. I think it's going to be compelled upon us to do so. That's just human nature. And that's just, I guess, maybe one of our human frailties. But a boundary, I think, is going to have to come at some time. But whether that line is drawn here or it's drawn 30 feet up the bank, I think we're going to still experience the same conflict unless we somehow or another start to manage the people and provide the people who you recreate on the river something. Now, in my experience, for the most part, the conflict is created, and what I think raises the emotion more than anything with our landowners is when recreationists or other people use private property as a restroom. Now, I've seen it. I've responded to many complaints. Members of my division have responded to those complaints. Members of every sheriff's office in the state have responded to those complaints. Now, if there is some way that we could divert those people away from private property so that they could use a restroom facility that's established where people know that it's where it's located, I think we could pull people away from private property so that they would start using that facility. And I've seen it work on the Deschutes River, and understandably the Deschutes River is the Cadillac of river management in Oregon, in my estimation, where we manage thousands and thousands of people each year in their recreation endeavor, and we've reduced the conflict to nearly nil with local landowners. But it didn't come easily, and it came through a lot of hard work, and you will find that if you talk to the people in the early days on the Deschutes River, the two things that made the biggest difference was to place Oregon State Police cadets on the river and establish facilities pull people to those facilities rather than private land. I'm still committed to that. It works. I've seen it. And it's kind of hard to argue against something that works so obvious. But that's what brought me to the point of thinking maybe there would be a possibility of entering into some kind of a project similar to that and applying it to some of our other waterways in Oregon. The Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation was instrumental when we started the project on the Deschutes River. The Oregon Heritage Foundation, Wildlife Heritage Foundation is still in existence. Is here, and Rod Robeck is here tonight to speak a little bit about the foundation and what some of the accomplishments the foundation has been able to do in Oregon. And since this is a public-private problem, I think possibly a public-private relationship between state agencies, landowners, any private foundation could provide some solutions to this issue, and we could possibly remove the conflict by identifying and establishing facilities for people on the river. That's kind of the long and the short of it, but I really do feel that until we start to look at the conflict and reduce the conflict, we're not going to solve the problem entirely. That's my experience that I've had, and I think, as you said when we started, Mr. Chair, it's time we got this problem solved and get on with it.
Thank you, and I appreciate your interest in trying to help us resolve this issue, Captain, because it is it's a very contentious issue. Hopefully we'll get there. Jim Lockwood and Paul Cleary, gentlemen, you've heard a little bit of the ideas, and I've talked to both of you a little bit about it. Can you give us your thoughts on this issue?
For the record, Jim Lockwood, Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Thanks for the opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 832. First of all, I'm not going to go through it, but I handed out a brief testimony on the basically how this nests with the policy on in statute now and then the programs that we have set up, and it kind of lays out some of ORS 390 as background. But more specifically to the concept that's being presented here in the Dash 5 Amendment, Section 16 is what I'll zero in on. Parks and Recreation, we're in the recreation business. Obviously, this is relevant. However, we don't happen to own and manage all of the rivers in the state, and so that's a big chunk to bite off, and what this lays out is the three pilot areas. A lot of this is the type of thing we're good at doing, and we like to do the collaboration, working with the different federal agencies, if they're the landowners or the county parks or whoever it is. the only probably hesitancy we have about it is that it's a challenge. It's a lot of work. We're talking maybe some roads or facilities, signs. Mentioned in here is education, enforcement, and so on. There's a lot of cooperation, collaboration to go on and to happen. We think to do an effective job, it would take some support, and so that's our big concern. No surprise to anybody. When you get into a new business, you want to do it right, and you want to have a professional staff, or like the Lindsay was saying, the cadets on site, or whatever it is, to make sure it's done right, and to make sure it comes off well, especially pilot projects. That's supposed to set the model and the example. So that's really where we're at. I understand there's a lot more issues with it, but Section 16 kind of hits the heart of our regular daily operation and on the ground and getting it set up and with lots of cooperation to get to that point.
Section 16 is five amendments?
Of the Dash 5,
thank you.
Excuse me.
Mr. Cleary,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Cleary, Director of the Division of State Lands. Again, I think I just reinforce what both these gentlemen have said. This focuses on trying to address the issue of recreational use management of the waterways without dealing with the thornier issue of ownership of beds or banks. We know from our upland management that facility development, signage, public education, monitoring, enforcement are key to helping people share the land, and that's what we're trying to do. Right now we've got kind of a situation where it's not real clear what activities are authorized below the high water mark along these waterways. It's not real clear what activities are prohibited. As a result, it's somewhat a no man's land, and to date we've been successful in keeping it a demilitarized zone, but we are concerned that the potential's there. Anytime we can get people working together to solve their problems, they get to learn from each other, and that's when we have some chances to succeed. And I like these ideas here.
Well, gentlemen, I want to pursue the concept of talking about putting together a program that's outlined in Section 16 of the Dash 5 in conjunction with the steelheaders and the private property owners. But the idea is put together some kind of a program that we can present to everybody and do it in an expedient manner. I don't want to drag this thing out another 4 or 5 months. It's not going to happen. I want to get going on this thing and try to get an issue resolved if possible, or at least a working document to build from. That's what I hope to be able to accomplish. Well, thank you very much, sir. Gentlemen, thank you. Folks, I want to get in with the testimony, and I apologize for taking so long, but I'm going to ask you to keep your comments short and succinct, if you will. Bear in mind, you probably said them before. We'll hear them again, understanding where you're coming from. And I want to start off. I'll have several of you come forward at the same time. Those of you who can get along, I will. Those of you I can't, I won't. So with that, I'd like to ask Gail Ackerman, because Gail's been here a couple of times. I mean, she's a very... Gail, are you with anybody else or anybody else? Betsy, you want to come forward? Chuck Bennett? Okay.
Well, you want to move things along?
Gail, I'd like to...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gail Ackerman. I'm an attorney from Portland. With me today is Betsy Johnson from Scappoose and Chuck Bennett from Staten. Is that accurate, Chuck?
Yes.
And I think Betsy will go first.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. Since 1928, our family has had the privilege of owning and caring for the headwaters of one of Oregon's most beloved trout streams, the Metolius River. All of the pivotal events in our family life are interwoven with that river. Our home is there. I was married there. My father, Sam, a former legislator, is buried on our property beside the fragile, pristine, almost mystical Metolius. For 71 years, we've cared for that river in ways that sometimes transcend common sense. My mother plants thousands of pine trees in a pine forest because she's worried the spacing isn't right, or that if one of the old growth giants dies, there'll be an empty spot. Each tree is practically a personal friend. We pick up trash, we pick up cigarette butts, we take care of that place. We do these things happily because we care for it. Over the years, the public has always had access to the headwaters. My early memories were cars actually driving to the literal water's edge, and over the years, my parents experimented with many methods to keep people away from the delicate banks. In the 1960s, my parents undertook a 10-year negotiation with the federal government to give away the headwaters.
Let me ask you a question, if I may. Are you going to read this whole thing?
Okay. What we're concerned about is a special class of river, and we are offering amendments that Ms. Ackerman will specify as soon as I conclude my remarks momentarily, saying that there are some rivers simply too fragile to be considered by this bill.
For your edification, that any amendments being proposed, I will review those first.
Then I will defer to Ms. Ackerman.
And then, Gail, I think you understand that. I'm not going to go 335-15 whatever amendments. Okay, I want those things. I request that you folks present those amendments to me in advance before the meeting starts, not the last moment.
Senator Carno, members of the committee, our amendments were submitted last Thursday and have been drafted into by legislative counsel into form.
Yes,
and I am not going to go through them line by line because you don't have time tonight. Betsy?
We are simply suggesting that there be a class of river created within this bill in an attempt to help reach a compromise that would suggest that there are some rivers simply too fragile to be included with people walking on the banks or manipulating flotation devices in the bed of the river that are frequently fish habitat areas. We are interested if there's some kind of a working group created to sit down with those that are interested in this bill to talk about rivers that historically may not have been included in the discussion. Our amendments suggest that we codify current law and include an additional status for these rivers that are simply too fragile to be recreated in an intense or heavy-use way.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Gail Ackerman. I'm here on behalf of Mrs. Samuel Johnson, Betsy's mother, and also on behalf of Kim Lundgren, who owns the house on the Metolius, another extraordinary parcel of private land on the Metolius River. Mr. Lundgren wanted me to convey that he has had extremely bad trespass problems that are getting worse every year because of the misunderstanding of rights by recreational users. I think that both the Johnsons and the Lundgrens would agree that legislation to clarify the respective rights and responsibilities of the public as recreational users and private landowners is important. But the problem with SB 832 is that it apparently was drafted without any consideration of the existing case law in Oregon that has established and defined the nature and extent of the floatage easement that the public definitely does enjoy on all of our rivers, even those where the public does not own the bed and the banks. What we have attempted to do with the Dash 4 amendments that we did submit previously is to bring SB 832 into precise compliance with the law as articulated by the Oregon Supreme Court on the nature and extent of the floatage easement. My written testimony goes into these cases in probably what you'd view as excruciating detail, and I'm going to skip it. But the important thing that you have to consider as legislators, and I think it's important for you to consider it, is to define what rights does the public have that go along with the floatage easement. Because the general public doesn't read old cases, and most lawyers don't either. And the rights that you particularly need to address and the ones that are particularly controversial go to what constitutes incidental use to the boating use, the floating use that the floatage easement obviously encompasses and has from the beginning of statehood. It's part of the Constitution on this common highway notion. What goes along with that? And the things that the Johnsons and the Lundgrens particularly object to, and I think a lot of other private landowners are concerned about, is it's one thing for somebody to float through your private property on the upland in a boat. And you can recognize the right to do that and the fact that you can't block that. But it's another thing entirely for people to get out of the boat and to camp picnic, wade, hunt, and otherwise carry out activities on the bed in the bank or the adjacent uplands. And in fact, the Oregon Supreme Court was very clear in a very old case that it has never reversed that these rights are reciprocal, and the person who's using the floatage easement has only a very incidental right to use the bank. And so what our Dash 4 amendments do, the bed or the banks, is to make it clear that the floatage easement doesn't include the right to use the land. It only encompasses the right to use the water for transportation. And I think that if you go farther than that and you start including in the so-called floatage easement the right to portage or camp or do these other things that are more upland.
Now, Gail, how can you put portage and camp in the same?
Because they both involve extended use of the upland or extended use. It's more than incidental use of the bed and banks. And what you're essentially saying with a portage is you are creating a recreational easement over the upland that never has existed under our case law. In fact, our case law says that if there are those blockages, natural blockages to passage, whether it's cobbles and riffles, I mean, our cases say you can't push through. There's a Supreme Court decision that says you can't do that. And if you can't push through, then you can't portage. I mean, a portage is an easement across the upland that's never existed under Oregon law. And if you adopt legislation to clarify this floatage easement that encompasses recreational uses like portaging and camping and those kinds of activities, then you're going to be in exactly the situation that the Montana legislature found itself in when it passed similar legislation, and the Montana Supreme Court found portions of that legislation that authorized hunting and camping in particular to be unconstitutional takings of private property without compensation. They recognized the floatage easement, but they didn't recognize these other extended use rights. So what I'd like to urge the committee to do, and again, cases are all cited in here and the correlation to the Dash 4 amendments, is to codify the existing floatage easement rights under Oregon law and then to articulate them for the public in the current statute so that landowners and recreational users know what their respective rights and responsibilities are.
Yeah, I'll move on. Let me ask you this, and I appreciate your comments and your willingness to give us a hand. Is it safe to say, in your opinion, that we need to do something pretty soon about this issue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I've talked to my clients a great deal about this, and I've advised them that, in my opinion, legislation is extremely desirable on this issue. The litigation would be very time-consuming, very expensive. Frankly, I think the recreational users think they win in the courts. They're relying on the CHETCO decision for that assumption. I think the CHETCO decision is inapplicable to the floatage easement question, and the floatage easement question is what they're really talking about.
Right.
And so I think prolonged litigation isn't good for anybody. I think legislation can be helpful, but it's not something either of my clients are going to accept if what it does is invite upland trespass or invite people to spend the afternoon waiting in their front yards.
And I conveyed those thoughts also to the opponents of the bill, Gail. But I do want to try to get something done or something crafted this session as opposed to 2 years down the road. I don't think it's going to do us any good in that respect. Now, I don't know where I'm going to be able to go with the case law. If that's in the Dash 4s, I do want to take a chance to review that. But I do want to try to move the process along.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, I've submitted written testimony, also a copy of my response to a 1998 request for a navigability study on the North Sandingham River. I own property and have resided on the North Sandingham for the past 25 years. In fact, I represented the area in the 1983 legislative session as a member of the House of Representatives and was a member of the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee chaired by your predecessor, Bill Bradbury, when we thought an end to navigability discussions at that time.
Beautiful.
It's our fault. Yeah, I think you make a very good point.
And I think that probably, whatever that was, 14, 15 years ago, we made a mistake and probably should have begun to address this issue in some way. And what we did instead was lay down the law that DSL was not to continue those studies. In my response and in following up on discussions, I believe, with Mr. Lilly at DSL, I proposed at the time in last year that representatives of our community up in the North San Juan River do exactly what you're proposing, which was a look at a pilot project on the North San Juan River to see if we could find some way to get folks sat down and both the property owners and the recreation users. I talked with my a local representative from the Northwest Steelheaders, Bill Sanderson, who suggested that I hold my water for a while, and we'll talk about it at the legislature. Here we are. I'm glad you're bringing Mr. Sanderson to the table, and we will start talking about these issues, because there are a whole range of problems. If you're a landowner along there that I've discussed with several of you that you run into, you've heard from people. I would just suggest that, yes, along with people using my property for a rest stop in the classic sense, another problem that I worry a great deal about, and the only problem I've had in 25 years, the only confrontation I've ever had with anyone, was a group from Portland who decided to build a fire in our woods. And I live upland, literally right up off the river, and I could not get them to put it out. I could ask, but there were about five or six of them and one of me, and I decided that the better thing to do was to retreat. I didn't call the police. It just struck me these folks will leave sooner. They did. I dug out the fire pit they'd created and cleaned it up. But I would hope you would address the problem of fire and also the whole issue of hunting, camping, and the associated uses.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Kellington.
Wendy?
I'm sorry. That's Mr. Kellington. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Wendy Kellington. I'm also an attorney. I'm representing just one guy. He's a property owner who has a ranch on the John Day River, Mr. Jack Grover. I won't repeat what Gail said. I agree with what Gail said with regard to the legal analysis that applies here. I will say, however, that I'm also a river rat, and I will disagree to the extent that people are claiming that there are all of these horrible problems that people experience through attempts to recreate on the river. I've floated the John Day River for many, many days with my family and friends and haven't run into problems, but maybe one of the reasons that I haven't had problems is I read soggy snickers, so I know where the public land is, and I don't bother private property owners. They've always been nice to me, wave at me, so I'm not sure that there really is a problem. But if there is a problem that we're interested in solving, I think amendments along the lines that Gail was talking about, or amendments along the lines of the Dash-6 amendment that we have suggested, which are very similar, are the appropriate way to go. I think that the state is ill-served in defining particular publics that it will preserve and protect the interests of at the expense of others. One of the examples of this is to create a class of children that are more precious than another class of children to be protected. I think that Jack Grover's little granddaughters having a slumber party outside his ranch along the John Day River are just as precious as any group of urban children who've gone to a recreational camp somewhere. And I think it's a little offensive to parents out there, parents with large, small families, who say that we create a special class of children that are meritorious of protection. I think that if there's an issue about protecting children from unsafe or undesirable people who are on the river, then that's a poster child for the problem that we may have out there. And the problem that we may have out there is one that people need to stay off of the private property. They need to understand that they have a right to float. I understand that, and I love that right to float. I cherish that right to float, and I use that right to float. But they also need to use the public land, lots of public land that is available to them, to recreate on and to engage in the kinds of activities that Senate Bill 832 provides for them. If a person wants to camp, if a person wants to create a fire, if a person wants to use restroom facilities, they need to figure that out. They need to figure that out on public land. The Dash-6 Amendment makes it clear that the Division of State Lands has to take a look at statewide policy that's also provided in the Dash-6 Amendment. It says, consistent with statewide land use planning laws, consistent with endangered species laws, consistent with applicable resource management plans and wild and scenic river plans, the Division of State Lands needs to provide adequate recreational opportunities for recreationalists. And there's a financing mechanism built into that as well, and that's like a snow park permit, a river park permit. Am I doing something wrong? I'm not a lobbyist.
I'm sorry. Typical attorney, you like to talk a lot.
I'm sorry.
Talk in town.
She is.
All right. One of the other things that I see in Senate Bill 832 that we need to step back and take a thought about is a lot of the land along these rivers is high-value farmland. These are working farms, working ranches. And the general rules is that camping, hunting preserves, and those kinds of uses are not permitted uses. Cutting public roads for working farms is not permitted uses. And so we can't just assume that we're going to create a new scheme that allows us for intensive public recreational use without considering that. We also have to consider endangered species, and we have to consider native fish runs. And if there's a special class of river created, which I'm not sure that that's helpful, but if we do that, the Grande River falls within that. It's the last undammed tributary, or whatever the words are, for the Columbia River. There are endangered species in there. There are already closed fish runs, a ton of them, maybe more than any other. So it deserves that kind of protection.
Lee, thank you very much for your testimony.
You are very welcome. Thank you for listening.
I may be a little bit curt, folks, but I want to try to get all you through this process tonight, if I can. I've got those along with the dash fours, the dash threes, the other dashes that I haven't presented yet.
Are there dams along the Umatilla River?
I'm not sure. John Day. Van Valkenburg.
She said John Day.
My name is Van Valkenburg. My first two initials are MD. I'm a lawyer from the Dalles. I represent a number of people on the John Day River, as well as myself, for which I have some interest there. As you know, and as I hear more from here, being here today, this is an issue that you got to bear by the tail, and in my opinion, you should let go of it. I don't like the bill. I don't think it's necessary, and I think it is a lawyer's dream for employment. My experience in this matter is, for a good number of years, I tried condemnation cases on the Columbia River and the John Day River and other rivers when the dams were being built, the highways and railroads were being relocated. In this day and age, when there's a real problem with the propagation of fish and the diminution of fish on the rivers, it seems to me out of place to give people a greater opportunity to impinge on private lands for the purpose of fishing or for any other reason. And it's also interesting to me, a federal Senate hearing that was held recently in Hood River, it was determined to some extent at least that when they're talking about breaching the dams on the Snake River, that the rivers on the shore that don't have any dams on them have the same percentage of loss of fish as the rivers with the dams. It seems to me we've got the same kind of issue here. There are legal means of resolving these issues. They're very complex. Or that if you draw a line, my God, you'll have litigation for the next 25 years over the line. We've had that for about 150 years already for the Meander Line over to Cannon Beach. They've got 7 lines on the shore. And I've been involved in some of that litigation. So I think this bill, and as you can see here today, there are more amendments coming. There'll be more presented to you. It gets more complex. The reason other legislative groups have not done anything about it, they found it smart not to.
I guess we're not very smart, Mr. Wolkenberg.
No, I wouldn't say that. I'm sure there's a reason to want to resolve these problems, but I don't think this is the way to do it. I'm very concerned about property rights, and I realize that we don't live in an age where property rights are the king's rights, but they're being eroded constantly. And I think this bill does that to some extent. Not to a great extent, but to some extent.
I've got to cut you off if I can, Mr. Porter.
Okay.
I'm going to cut you off if I can. I've got other folks to testify.
Okay.
You cut me off. I think you're opposed to the bill, and I understand that a couple of times.
I made my point.
Okay, sure. I'm interested in property rights. I agree. Is there Penny Simmental? And Jean, do you want to come over? Do you want to come with Penny? Okay. And Jean, I think you understand that I'm trying to move this process along if I can, so go ahead.
I got one thing. Chairman Turno, members of the committee, I'm Jean Wilkinson with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and I signed up further down the line. I don't know if you would rather have me say just a couple of comments after Tammy gives her comments or not, up to you, but I'm just accompanying Tammy Simmental here, who is a landowner that will be significantly affected by this bill.
Tammy, go ahead.
Okay, my name is Tammy Smell, and I'm speaking for many of my neighbors on the John Jay by being here tonight to express opposition to Senate Bill 832. My husband Dave and I are property owners on the John Jay. We raise a family and make a living on our land there. We have been on the front line throughout this issue. We have been and are good stewards. We are proud of the positive environmental impact that have been the results of our efforts. We have listened to the complaints of the steelheaders many times. We are now being sued by them. They seem to want all they can get, no matter what the cost. With approximately 67% of Oregon state and federally owned, and 90% of the John Jay, I know they have enough. I question their motives. There is much public land in need of attention. I think they should funnel their efforts that direction. Our property is desirable because of the good management we provide. We should not be punished for this. If the lands that have been abused by the public usage are repaired, they will have plenty of places to go. I am a taxpayer as well as a property owner. I don't think our property rights should be threatened over a few more fishing holes, especially since the most desired fish in the river is now listed in danger. We're 20 miles from the closest town and 30 miles from the closest emergency services. The fastest response time is an hour if the volunteers are available. Sherman County is one of the largest landmass counties in Oregon. We have one sheriff and one deputy on duty at any time. We live on a dirt road down at the bottom of a steep canyon. Our county can't afford to maintenance our road now. If there's added traffic, we're going to have a big problem. I don't believe if this bill passes, there will be any funds available for these problems. We are already having trouble funding the programs that are in place within our counties now. Farmers are constantly having property rights eroded too often by people who do not respect property rights. Farming is a difficult occupation. This bill does not help, but makes it worse. I know that doing what's right is not always easy, and doing what's easy is not usually right. This bill is not the answer. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Can't be heard.
Thank you, Jean, comment? You're using your time now, you know, because you ain't got them time left. Go ahead.
Okay. Chairman Turner, members of the committee, thank you. I just wanted to tell you that I think that if this legislature is going to consider a bill and carry a bill through this process, perhaps we should start not with this bill, but something a little more towards what Gail Ackerman was talking about with the Dash-4 amendments, because that's currently what Oregon law is, and it would codify that. And maybe we should work from that perspective rather than this, since this, in our view, would increase litigation and conflicts, not decrease it, because as Gail talked about, it would perhaps create a public easement, people would lose property rights, and there would definitely be conflicts with that. The other point, last point, I'd like to bring up is that I'm sure you're aware of it, but farmland and ranch land are entering into a new era as far as environmental issues. We're entering into an era of environmental regulation, and we've been very involved in that process. It's called Senate Bill 1010. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's going to require many things. For example, what is considered in the Umatilla Basin is a requirement that no bank instability should occur by the year 2003. Now, if that's the case, then the landowners, not the public, are responsible for meeting that requirement. Those types of environmental issues and those regulations have to be considered in any piece of legislation that's going to allow public recreation.
Thank you. We'll review those things.
Thank you.
Lee McMurphy or Murphy? I'm sorry, I'm murdering your names, folks, but from Portland. Okay, what is?
Pardon me?
Leo begins with an M, ends with a Y.
How do you pronounce that last name?
Unfortunately. And I've got 1 hour to get all you folks out of this room. So if we're going to make it, we have to say our piece and move on. I can't. Bill, go ahead.
I'll be relatively brief because I didn't hear about the bill for the first time this morning. I was called by a friend of mine advising me. I'm speaking as an owner of two parcels of farmland north of Salem, one running on the Willamette River, about 10 miles north of here. The other one near St. Paul, Oregon, across the river from Newburgh. Most of us would be affected by this bill.
Bill, give us your name for the record, please.
Leo S. Meising, M-E-Y-S-I-N-G. I've been a steelhead fisherman myself and a salmon fisherman in Oregon for the last 46 years. I don't ever recall myself having a confrontation with the landlord because we simply observed that we understood the plain old common law that people have private property rights, that you have access to navigable streams between the high water mark and the low water mark, that streams that were not navigable, the owner owns the property underneath the stream, subject to the rights of the public and fishing, other circumstances such as that. This bill, I think, creates an immense amount of confusion. And to me, the existing status of the common law as we grew up and understood it isn't broke, why fix it? We're dealing here with a situation of intense public use of mostly on the weekends and other law enforcement agencies are understaffed or not staffed at all. We're talking about remote areas where confrontations are apt to occur between the landowner and the user of the stream. I think if there's a certain element of courtesy by the sportsman who use the streams in deference to the landowner, you wouldn't have confrontations. But the confrontation when they occur under the impression in the public that they have the right to use somebody's land for their own particular pleasure, and that gets crossways with the farmer's rights, the landowner's rights, you're going to be in continual confrontation with that perhaps enforcement of a very complex law.
And Neil, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Dan Primus. You're pretty good, Dan. You know your face.
Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sam Prentice. I'm from Lyons, Oregon.
Most of my concerns have already been spoken to, but there are a couple I would like to mention. One being meander lines. I hope you do a real study of meander lines because a number of years ago in Astoria, I had the opportunity to look some of these up and some of them cover major portions of watersheds as well as tidelands, dike tidelands. I think this would be a big concern to a lot of people. My other concern is portage. I have no problem with people floating rivers or that sort of thing, but I do have a problem with this portage thing where people can walk through your backyard. Webster Dictionary says it includes packing of supplies and equipment, so I guess a case of beer would qualify. And I just think that is distasteful. What happens, where's the liability if the person's dog bites somebody that's up there, trips over the water hose or what have you, breaks one of mother's rose bushes. Pollution, I hope, I understand Santa Ana River is supposed to be on this pilot study. City of Lyons, the City of State, and the City of Salem all get their water from the Willamette River. I think this should be of great concern. Fish protection, there's been a few words on it, but almost all these Willamette Valley streams hold spring chinook and summer steelhead. And the low periods in the fall, towards the fall, what protection are these people going, or fish going to have with a major population close to an urban area using these streams? As far as deeds are concerned, I think everything has gone through title and trust or supposed to be. And my understanding now is, I heard Senator Wild mention this, that these deeds are possibly illegal. Well, boy, we spent millions of dollars getting illegal deeds over the years, it would appear to me. I doubt if we'll ever be compensated for it. Enforcement or regulations, state lands has been pushing this thing, and maybe rightly so. But I have heard no mentions of funds for this. I hear cooperation and working with different units, but nowhere do I hear anything about funding. I can assure you that all the police agency, the county, our state, are underfunded, as you well know. So where is the enforcement going to come? Where is the protection for the landowner?
Where's it at now, Dan?
Pardon me?
Where's it at now?
What's that?
Protection.
Well, there is none.
Okay. Well, all you can do is go up, I hope.
It's not the only thing it could do. And it would be at the very bottom of the priority list as far as a complaint is concerned.
Right. But thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time.
Liz Hamilton. Ms. Hamilton, are you with somebody else? Okay.
I can disagree with you.
Well, is there John Guerin here from John Guerin? Mr. Guerin, come forward, please. And folks, I'm going to try to ask you to be succinct as short as you can, if you will. Please go ahead, please.
I'll do my best, since I don't have training as an attorney. For the record, I'm Liz Hamilton, and I have the good fortune of serving as the Executive Director for the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. NSIA consists of over 200 businesses, mostly in the Northwest, a few beyond, who are dependent on healthy rivers, lakes, and streams, and access to those streams for the activity of sport fishing. We appreciate very much your willingness to have a public dialogue on this issue. I think, as was said earlier, it's been something that's been cast aside in other legislation, and we appreciate your willingness to have a public dialogue on it. We support Senate Bill 832 because it gives public access to the beds and banks. Losing this public assurance would be financially detrimental to the businesses that I work for. The sport fishing industry in Oregon currently generates about $1 billion in economic well-being to the state. And back in 1996, a national study was done showing that in Oregon, anglers spend an average of about $130 to $150 a day when they're recreating. So we have a real positive impact that we give to this state. We see this bill as a compromise and only addressing the issue of access. In a perfect world, perhaps the public might own the beds and banks as they do beaches of Oregon. But in this instance, I think the compromise is important in the public dialogue and that we're willing to go that direction. Mm. Listening to the emotion of the gentlewoman, Samantha, I think her name was earlier, I can see what the court system could do to this issue and hope that we can find a way to steer clear of that. The bill is critical to resolving the conflict that we currently experience on our Oregon rivers. So we
thank you very much. I'm going to cut you off. And I'm just going to hear if you go ahead and take the word, please.
As Chairman Connell and committee members, my name is John Guerin, and I am the director for the National Organization for Rivers. River navigability and the public right to freely use navigable rivers is covered by three laws, the State's Admission Act, the Oregon State Constitution, and the Public Trust Doctrine. These laws give certain guaranteed rights to the free public use of navigable rivers, including the beds and banks up to the high water. The laws apply to all states and are a condition of statehood, and specifically navigability is a federal legal determination. Oregon is not unique in being faced with controversy over river rights. 38 states have attempted to preempt governing laws and public rights on navigable rivers. In every case, the courts have overturned state laws that conflict with these rights. There's a broad, consistent history of case law to support this statement, and I hope you will read the enclosures, and I won't refer to them anymore.
John, this is your handout that you passed out to
us. Yes.
Good, then I'm going to ask you to just end up your talk with just a brief statement, if you would, please.
Yes, sir. I think that the Senate Bill 832 is framed correctly, that doesn't infringe on public rights, that it would be a step in the right direction. But if all of these amendments are presented to the bill, it's a guarantee or at least an invitation into the federal courts, and I don't think that anybody wants to go there.
Thank you, Mr. Guerin. Thank you very much. Again, folks, let me remind you that I'm going to cut you off if you get too long-winded, so please keep your comments short, succinct, and to the bill, whether you support it or not, if you would, please. E. Thompson? Eddie Thompson? Jim Reed? Ms. Thompson? Reed, go ahead, please.
My name is Jim Reed. I live in Jasper, Oregon. I'm a member of the Lima Kayak and Canoe Club and helped write Section 3 for the third edition of Foggy Sneakers, and we had concerns then about navigability issues, which helped work on. What I'm concerned about, I'm a Class 5 boater, and so the things that worry me are huge rocks and trees that block the river. So what I am concerned about is guaranteed right of safe passage. In order for us more advanced boaters, in order to get around obstructions in the river, we just need access to the high water mark, and we can slip around the water and get that in as quickly as possible. So it would be great to, I'd like to see the Senate bill sponsored in that we can get right of safe passage.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Ms. Thompson.
My name is Eddie Thompson. I'm from Lake Oswego, a member of Northwest Steelheaders. Before this issue can be resolved, the rights of the public must be made clear. This can be done with legislation for processing navigability studies on every river as authorized by current law. It can be done through an initiative process or through the courts. Believe me, the money spent on navigability studies and initiative process for the courts would be better spent on solving the problems and divide both sides on this issue. Waterways meet the standards for navigability as established by the federal courts. People are navigable, and they do belong to all citizens of Oregon. They should not have to be going through all this debate when the courts, especially the U.S. Supreme Court, has been telling us that for many years. I'm sorry the landowners have been misled to thinking they own the beds and banks of our rivers. The truth of the matter is that they don't, and the courts will confirm this if they do at case after case. It's time to face the facts. This issue of public rights is not going to go away.
Eddie,
yes.
Let me cut you off because you read the document and I don't have enough time to listen to the whole thing. Let me ask you to summarize if you would, please.
I support the bill at 832, and I think it's a move in the right direction.
Thank you. Appreciate that very much. I apologize, folks, for the thing after the big. Ms. Thompson, if you would, we'd like a copy of your written testimony, and we'll pass it out to members of our committee. Kathy? Who? Yeah. Kathy, please. You bringing Ms. Jones
with
you?
Oh, I'm
bringing her. Bodyguard, huh? Okay. And you are, sir?
Oh. Chair Carno, members of the committee, I'm John Urquhart. I'm a Sandy River property owner.
Okay. Okay, folks.
I'm Beverly Jones, and I'm a property owner. Okay. Kathy Amundson, property owner. I'm Sandy River.
Okay. You folks were here last time. We dealt with the Sandy River issue and navigability, so I assume you can both, all three of you, be very short.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Me first. I'm a 20-year property owner, as you know, on the Sandy River. I am against the Senate bill. Not all rivers can be classified a Class A river as the Columbia is, because Columbia is a much larger river than the Sandy or many of the other streams that are listed on this. I do support Ash 4, which is Gail Ackerman's bill, and I do agree with you that we do need to find a solution that will benefit both recreationalists and property owners. Lindsey Ball's comments that he made, I also found quite interesting, and I do feel that he's right as far as that we have to pull the recreationalists away from the private properties and onto the public lands. I do support a public 40 easement, or not 40 easement, but a 40 easement, and I feel that we have to work with all landowners, not just the large property owners, but also the small property owners, because we also have problems that are unique. Small property owners, too. Thank you very much.
Senator Tarno, committee members, as you know, I'm a property owner on the Sandy River, and I've been fighting this issue since 1992. I do own my property. I hold title to real property, but I also understand that the water is an easement over the property. I begged the Division of State Lands for years to come up with a solution on the floatage easement. I have my notes when I was part of the stakeholders group where we tried desperately to work out a solution. We're dealing with sensitive creeks and small rivers here that they're trying to class like the ocean or the Columbia. I don't understand why this has not been resolved. We've had to stand by and watch the Division of State Lands help the Northwest Steelheaders, and I have found it very offensive. The floatage easement is the answer. I understand the rivers are free. They are open for recreation. Everybody has a right to float the rivers and have reasonable use of the bed and the bank. But that does not mean they can come up on my property and camp and hunt and do whatever else.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Senator Charno, a little over a year ago, I testified before the interim committee. You were there. At that time, I recommended legislation that would clarify the public's rights to the waterways of the state. And like Dale Ackerman, I look at state law and say that the Oregon Supreme Court in 1869 clearly recognized an absolute right in public to use any waterway that was capable of being floated upon. And at that same time, I go beyond Ms. Ackerman. The Oregon Supreme Court recognized the right in the public to the reasonable use of the bed and the bank so long as it was incident to and necessitated by the public's travel and navigation of the waterway. Walking on the bank, getting out, stretching, having a lunch, scouting a rapids, all this to me is reasonable and incident to the public right of use. Camping, hunting, bank fishing, picnicking, are land dependent. They travel on the waterway doesn't occasion those particular uses, and for that reason, I oppose the bills as President Rick.
Folks, thank you very much.
Thank you. Leo, you got a brief statement you want to make?
I do, very briefly.
Very briefly.
Okay. Senator Carno, members of the committee, Greg Leo, have been working on this issue for 2.5 years for the Sandy River property owners. I'm especially looking for middle ground here this evening. It appears that this bill overreaches and is out of balance. I think last session we looked at Bill 1140, Senate Bill 1140, which was out of balance, perhaps the other direction. There could be a combination of things which I think you could find some middle ground here. First of all, the property rights will need to be respected. Floating easements need to be recognized. There needs to be a sportsman's code of ethics so that certain behaviors are controlled. Something like a revocable right of access based on behavior might be a thing to look at. Also, given the amount of public land that's on these waterways, that should be opened first. We formed an organization, the Oregon Alliance for River Stewardship. We ask moderate interests on both sides of this issue to join with us, try to find some solutions that are practical, and which promote cooperation between landowners and fishing recreationals. Thank you very much.
Susan Davenport.
Hello, my name is Susan Davenport. I'm a landowner on the Little North Fork, Sandy Am River. The problem that I have with the bill is that it allows camping, the picnicking, and the hunting on private lands. As if anybody knows, the North Fork is one of the closest places to Salem for people to go and swim. There are a number of federal, state, and county campgrounds and access points there, but what the area really is a party central. We have a real problem there with young people and alcohol. There isn't a day that goes by where we don't have emergency vehicles to allow them to come down. We're already picking up lots of beer cans and diapers and plastic bags and things. If they're allowed, and there's no hours in this bill. I mean, if you had it cut off even at dark, we could do some control.
Would you feel better if the issue of camping and hunting and picnicking was not part of the language?
Very much. that would at least allow us to cut the partiers off. As it is, it's wide open for all the partying right now in the legislation, and there is not the law enforcement capability to take care of that.
Thank you very much. Ladies, you both will be very concise and short. Besides, Marla?
Marla, yes.
Who is?
Laura. Laura Smith.
Laura Smith. Okay.
Chair Turner, members of the committee, I'm here representing the Oregon cluster of YMCAs. You're very familiar with the camp issues in this bill, so I won't go over those. I just wanted to let you know that we have worked out some amendments with Petitioner Phil Donovan. We were very happy to do that. There's just a couple aspects of the amendment we'd like to adjust. First, we propose that during such periods as the camp is used primarily by minors be removed from that amendment. We simply feel that that'll be too confusing. At our camp, the camp is used by Multnomah County School District for residential outdoor school. So throughout the spring and fall, there are children there. And we just feel that if they ask for permission, we'll grant it if children aren't present. And the other thing we wanted to address was the signage. We want to work out something with the Department of State Lands, and I have spoken with John Lilly, and he says we can do that. So they post signs that are universal across the state and really say under ORS, this number, public access is not allowed, rather than stating this is a youth camp, because we feel that that could be a draw to child predators. So if we can get those things worked out, we are okay with the bill and hope that we can pass this. Thank you.
For the record, I'm Marla Miller with Portland Area Council of Campfire, and we have operated a 600-acre camp for 75 years on the Sandy River, Camp Namanu. And we have the same concerns, of course, and Laura has sort of headed up working out our issues. And this bill, if we can get some of the changes in the amendment, we will be able to support it. Because, of course, our major concern is safety and safety of the kids. And every year we have about 5,500 kids that go through our camp. And we're year-round, and we have had serious concerns over the years and have called for enforcement, but of course, as someone said earlier, it's not always a top priority. And the camp runs right, the river runs right through the heart of our camp, so our kids are exposed to that. And we have kids from second grade to 12th grade out there every day.
All right, thank you both very much. George Hadley?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is George Hadley. I own Fly Country Outfitters. It's an Irvish retail store here in Salem. I'm also a river guide and fly fishing, so we use the rivers a lot. We are in support of Senate Bill 832, and also John Colburn, one of our employees, has also written testimony for you, and I won't read that. And he was unable to be here this evening. But he is a legislative chairman for the Oregon Council of the Federation of Fly Fishers. And the Oregon Council of Federation of Fly Fishers is a member organization of the River Recreation's Right Coalition. And they are also urged the Senate Land and Water Use Committee to pass Senate Bill 832 to the full Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Allison Smith.
Chairman, I can be so brief. My name is Allison Smith. You can call me Al. I support SB 832. I've submitted a very brief written document.
Thank you, Mr. Spank. I appreciate that very much. Thanks, Al. Andy Ewing.
My name is Andy Ewing. I own property on the Kilchis River. When I purchased the property, I got title to it, to the center of the river. I've been paying taxes on it during that time frame, and I thought it was mine. When I heard about the navigability studies, I conceived, or it seemed to me that it was basically a land grab. navigability studies have been conducted on the river that I'm on, and each one of them over those, and three of them to be specific, have found that the river wasn't navigable. The issue keeps coming up. I have known that there was a flowage easement that existed, and my opinion has been that what was needed here was to define and codify the flowage easement. I think that taking people's property is something that I'm very disturbed about. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Bob Hall, or is that it?
Mr. Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. My name is Bob Hall. I represent Portland General Electric. PG&E is essentially neutral on the bill. There is one section in the bill that we are very interested in. That's in the my testimony reference to dash 1 is now dash 5 out. That's the language that allows the dam operator to restrict access above, below, and around the dam strictly for safety purposes. This is required by, you know, for safety reasons. It's also required by FERC under our FERC license. With that, if you move forward, you'd like to see that language in there. Thank you.
Bob, there'd be a trespass issue as far as PG&E is concerned. What is wrong that thing that's to be on the property or PG&E?
It could be. It's also on the river itself, because we have to be able to restrict motors within, you know, in the floor base to the dams. We really don't want boats right up against the dams. Things
is that
like
posted
that.
Now? Is that property?
Yes. Oh, yes. We're required in our FERC license to have posting on our property.
Okay.
So it is posted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Ritchie? And Mr. Ritchie, I've got some other folks that I believe with you also. Steve Barber? Abjar. Yes. Abjar? How about Art Israelson? Art? And Mr. Ritchie, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chairman Carnell and members of the committee. My name is Norm Ritchie. I'm with the Association of Northwest Steelheaders and a citizen of Multnomah County. I'd like to present you with a different face of the steelheaders you've seen through this contentious issue. In part of our support of the Dash 5 amendment, the steelheaders as the main goal as the restoration and enhancement of our fisheries and our rights as sports anglers to access these fisheries. Many of our activities towards these goals are in harmony with the landowners and adjacent habitable waters. As rivers users, we recognize our responsibility to keep the rivers clean and healthy. We work with the Adopt the River program in concert with SOLV, doing several river cleanups a year. And in order to achieve that, we work with state parks, county parks, and municipal parks to help gather the litter and final disposition of that litter. We also work with the parks and private properties for storm and flood damage. Oxbow Park on the Sandy in the previous large winter storm. In one weekend work crew.
And Norm, let me interrupt. Any of all three of you gentlemen are supportive of this bill, at least a project that we can get to where everybody's somewhat happy with what we're doing. So summarize, please, if you will, and I'll ask all three of you to do the same thing.
Just wanted to point out that we have the capability not only to verbally support the amendment to Dash 5, but to put manpower and resources behind that to reinforce the changes that are required. People have said here that there's a lack of police support. The steelheaders have been supportive of the Sandy Claxton Stewardship Fund, which has successfully put another police officer in the Sandy Claxton Basin. Much of the activity of that police officer is involved in protecting property as well as fish protection.
Okay, thank you, Norm. Steve?
Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee,
My name is Stephen Badjar. I'm a steelheader from Albany. And everybody's been talking about long-term deeds. I have an example there that was written in June of 1995 that says that, except for that portion below the river, below the high water mark. Let me give you a little history, if I may. I moved up here in 78. That area where that building now is located was nothing but a brush pile. The party that bought it was a local. He knew what the river levels were. And if you will look down on the back view of that building where the base of the foundation is, the water, I've seen the water up about halfway up that, what would be halfway up that foundation line. For the two, he built this property, and for the first 2 years, there was no problem. He permitted us to fish air freely, mingled with us, and suddenly something happened that he became irritated, I presume. I haven't been able to discuss it with him rationally. He put a posted sign down. I went to the sheriff's department. They assured me we could have access to that place. We have access to it along that rail fencing there. We can get to it. And fishing in front of his place is desirable. It's the tail out of a large pool. That's where the fish are. And why somebody would disregard what we think is a very open explanation of what his property limits are is a mystery. I can see that he would be somewhat confused or, say, disenchanted with some of the users. I'll admit that. I've seen it. But it is well below the high water line, depending upon the definition. I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Bart.
Senator Carnell, Chairman and members of the committee, I want to play about a 15-second tape from my telephone, which I recorded this morning. One of the two things I want to do. We have been told by those that have camps on the Sandy River that they spend a lot of time calling the sheriff's office and reporting problems.
I just spoke to our person record that takes care of all the reports to the agency, and it is all computerized. And we have absolutely no record of any calls at that location that you gave me. Nothing. Nothing. Not even offensive littering. So if you have any questions.
This is a recorded message from the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. They have no history of any recorded complaints at Camp Mnemonic. The other thing I gave to you was a copy of some information that's totally different having to do with human waste. This is something you have not seen in former hearings. On the John Day River, for 141 miles of the John Day, the Bureau of Land Management requires people to carry portable toilets and carry their human waste out. It's also required that they dump their garbage through a sieve and carry it out. They can be arrested if they don't do this. They cannot have a fire during the fire season. During the non-fire season, they have to have that fire in a pan, not built on the rocks and making a big mess. They have maximum party sizes on the river, or it's part of the river that can't be motorized during the summer. These are some of the things that we haven't looked at in the past, and I would appreciate it if you would look at them. I have a question of the Samantles. They're very much concerned about the wildlife and fish in their river, and I would like to know why they rent out their river bank. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Someone, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Chris Foster?
My name is Chris Foster from Lake Oswego, Oregon. Thank you, Senator Tarno and the committee members for hearing this having the courage to hear this bill. I'm a member of the Northwest Steelheaders, a volunteer for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I don't represent them, but I do work in the Master Angler Program where we teach young kids how to fish and that kind of thing, and teach them the proper respect for private property. We don't tolerate vandalism or disregard for private property rights and that kind of thing. We teach them to pick up garbage. Myself, when I go down the river with a drift boat, or if I have permission to fish the banks, I pick up all the garbage, and there's a lot of garbage I pick up that is not fishermen's garbage. It's burn barrels and different things like that that come from landowners. So there's a two-way street here. I support Senate Bill 832.
Thank you. Dan Doherty. Mr. Doherty? Let me see, Dan.
My name is Dan Doherty from Lake Oswego, Oregon. My family and I own a farm in North Marion County. I'm also a director of the North Marion Irrigation District. We have a lot of problems with this bill. I'm opposed to it, first off. One particular problem that we have is that we get washouts. So we had a washout in the 96 flood, at least a couple of them. One at a major irrigation site we put our pumps. And it's a cutout in the land. Now, our deed is a very, very old deed. It goes back to the early 1800s. And Etienne Lucier and Pierre Bleek settled that area on the French Prairie. And they are prominent figures in Champollion, Oregon history, those two. Anyway, we own now to mean low water. The surveyable line that we had to the, not to the middle of the river, but it's out in the river, has been usurped, and we now own to mean low water. These pump stations are now below the mean high water level. So essentially, under this bill, we would not be able to make repairs to those to bring them up to the level standards of the upland land that they used to be. And the state, when we go to pull a permit at Division of State Lands, then we would now have to look at the issue of whether or not the public has a right to that below mean high water level.
Dan, under what section of the bill would prevent you from doing the repair work to your pump?
Well, it wouldn't essentially prevent it, but what it does is it says that it's now below that mean high water level that the public has a right to access.
So don't you have a water right to that area?
We have a water right to that area, but we're now, I'm not talking about putting the pump now down low. I'm talking about what the engineer said we have to do to bring that pump station back up to par. And that is a fill and removal requirement, which DSL will be involved in. So when the engineers go to pull that permit, then they'll have to deal with another issue about this trespass zone that goes along the river and now goes into this cutout because it's below that mean high water line, where it wouldn't have been a problem before because it was above the mean high water. But we have to bring it back up to that standard. If we don't bring those washouts back up to those standards, then we end up with the bank cutting when we get high water again, especially in flood conditions. So we'll just lose more and more and more land. And that's a real scary prospect for us because we don't want DSL making determinations that, well, you're interfering with the public's right when you put, irrigation pipe across here or when you put in the fill or whatever else you have to do to stabilize this land. So that's one real big issue for us. We do allow people on our beaches. We've never had a problem with it. The only areas that we post are the pump sites. And usually people stay away from those. We've had a few problems with, we get broken beer bottles and the standard stuff, people chucking those from the boats. And we've had people shut off the pumps manually from down below. One time we caught them and they said it was noisy, so they shut it off, but they were going to turn it back on when they left. And we didn't have them arrested because they were real nice about it and they were confused about what they were doing to the irrigation set when they did that and the timers that we had up above. But other times they do shut off irrigation sets from down there, and we've even had an intake pipe shot up at one pump site. So we do have to post those particular areas where we have our pumps. It's also a safety issue, too. We don't want people messing around with them or kids playing with any electrical equipment or anything else down there. We also had a cat that was up above the pump station, and they ran it over into the river, down the bank, tumbled it, and went into the river.
I don't think it's still going up.
Well, it's not, but we've been able to post those and generally keep people away, and we do try to keep people away from those if we see them down there. We don't bother people on the rest of our beaches. A lot of the people we know, and they do a generally a good job of cleaning up. So the other part is that it's just, it's a land grab, and I remember some years ago the State Parks Department wanted to redefine the vegetation line at the coast, and they had a bill that would set it at a certain type of a tree. Well, they found out that that tree was like 2 miles inland, and they would be, you know, they'd have coverage over most of Cannon Beach and other cities if the bill went through.
Gordy, summarize.
Pardon?
Summarize, if you would, please.
Well, what I'd like you to pay attention to is on page 3 of this, and I have some amendments that I would like you to look at. One of them is the first one there, number 1, the language should be added to section 1, 5BD. Any river, stream, or body of water that has had its flow, direction, or depth altered by any issued license, permit, or direct act of any agency of the state or federal government. And that would be under the exemptions for the type A waters of bodies, or bodies of water. And then I have another one here, which I don't think people like, but I'd like to see in there. And under number 3, I'd like you to strike the words, under section 1, number 15, strike the words including but not, the word hunting, the word fishing, and the words other water-related activities and uses and related incidental uses. But I'd also like to see something in expense, maybe a bond posted for mitigation of lands that are trampled on or destroyed, because you can't have salmon recovery on one hand and essentially two-legged cattle now trotting all over the banks of the rivers.
Hey, Dan, thank you very much for that written testimony. I appreciate that. You ended up on a good note. Jim Virgin. Virgin, and is Tom Wolf also here?
Chairman Tarno, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Virgin. I'm president of the Oregon Kayaking Canoe Club and a landowner on the Mistuca River. To be very brief, I just need to let you know that 15 years ago I learned how to kayak, and since then, kayaking has become a part of my life, what I want to be able to spend and give with my children. I have 2 daughters, and I want them to be able to have the opportunity to see the beautiful waterways that we have in our rivers and in this state. I've kayaked around the world, and these are some of the best, without a doubt. As a landowner, I'm, of course, concerned to be able to make sure that we need to differentiate between access on the rivers versus access to the rivers. I don't want people coming through my yard to be able to necessarily get to the river, but I have a hard time considering how can we keep people from being on the river any more than I can keep people from going down the road in my street or even walking on the sidewalk. Maybe one way to look at this is that the rivers are the highways, natural highways of Oregon, and the banks are those little sidewalks. It's of concern for me as a kayaker because it's a safety issue and of the members of my club to be able to see and spot obstacles. I may be doing brief scouting and standing on the bank at the high water mark and then possibly being able to portage. My portaging to me is very, very important. It is a safety issue. It's an issue of life and death. And for many of the people I go with, I've unfortunately lost friends. I don't want to lose any more. So with that, thank you for hearing this issue.
Jim, you made a real tough uphill battle to use the bank as your sidewalk.
Well, it's not directly totally as the sidewalk, but the ability to be able to access that is very important.
Cool.
Chairman Tarno, members of the committee. My name is Tom Wolf. I'm the Oregon Council Chairman of Trout Unlimited, the largest cold water conservation group in the United States, and you have my testimony right in front of you, so to be succinct, our group is in support of Senate Bill 832.
Tom, thank you very much. That ends the public hearing. Signed up for Senate Bill 832. I'm going to go into work session for the purpose of talking to my committee and try to get some directions on where we should go. We've got several proposed amendments to 832, and I'm going to suggest we have our committee administrator put all this together and give us a rough report on what those each set of amendments will do to the bill,
council will do for it or against it or what have you, but give us an idea of what the proposed amendments will do for the bill. We're going to bring this bill back into a work session, and we're going to do something with this bill. If that's amenable to you folks. Now, I don't know when it's going to be, but we are going to look at these amendments on this, take a look at them, and see how they will impact this bill with the next.
Yes, Mr. Chair, what do we do if we like certain aspects of various amendments, but we don't like any amendment by itself?
We try to put them together in a package that we like or agree with.
Okay. We will try.
Yeah, we'll try that, anyway. Anything else that's going to be ordered? I apologize to you folks who came here on other issues, but we are going to adjourn our meeting, and that's a way to view those amendments that we have proposed to us. Yeah, I will be talking with Dr. Ron to you folks, okay?
All right.
Now we're adjourned.
Okay.